Unlock your magic clanger, Froggy. Here comes the Colonel.
Oh, yeah, the comedians have to break in here and upset a serious science program. We share the same building with the studio down the hall, auditions for Comedy Central, and the people walk in once in a while just to give us a little problem. Well, we're back here in the second half hour of the Promise of Tomorrow on the Science News Radio Network. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. In a minute, we're going to get back to Stephen Hollis, manager of the Watson IoT engineering marketing team for IBM. And then we're going to hear from Bill Radvick. He is going to talk to us about innovative solutions for the treatment of nerve damage. But right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information.
Welcome to the Fountain of Useless Information. How can I help you?
Yes, we see. We have awakened the spirit of the fountain. Oh, spirit of the fountain, who? We threw in the coins, of course, because the spirit of the fountain knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. All right, oh, spirit of the fountain, here's today's query. What cooking pan was China's gift to the culinary world in the 3rd century? China's gift to the culinary world, what pan was it in the 3rd century, oh, spirit of the fountain?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the other.
Aha, we see the spirit of the fountain does know all, hear all, see all, and tell all. The cooking pan that was China's gift to the culinary world in the 3rd century? If you said the wok, you are absolutely correct. All right, let's get on with our program. Okay, so we're back with Stephen Hollis. He's the manager of the Watson IoT engineering marketing team for IBM, and his reaction to sometimes how we outsmart ourselves with just too much new technology.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of interesting. There was a story in Tuesday's Wall Street Journal about all of this self-braking kind of technology now that are built into cars.
Yeah.
And, you know, this being, just between me and you, off the record, if you will. But same thing where these systems are now not behaving properly. You know, they're stopping, like they had a case where the car just stopped and they were on the freeway, on the expressway. And so, you know, it's getting into this notion of you have to think about what are the conditions or what are those real extreme cases where, like to your point, well, what if it didn't start again? Or what if the brakes are applied? Or what if it suddenly accelerates? Or. So yeah, that's the thing that's going to make the whole testing and that kind of thing extremely important.
Yeah, I remember a number of years ago, and you're too young to know this, back in the early days of the automobile, the Fords were known as Tin Lizzies, and it was said that you could keep them going with baling wire. So, they're always going. And you mentioned a minute ago, off the record. Now, you know, I'm a reporter, and when somebody says off the record, that means I got to cut it out. But you didn't say anything that you wouldn't want to have public, right, on the record.
No, that was fine. It was just I didn't know how germane it was to what you would use in your story. So I just, didn't want to, because I can chat about cars for a long time because I'm a car guy. I didn't want to pontificate about how it is. But it was in the journal, and I thought it was fascinating because you have major manufacturers that are, have built cars for a long time that are now struggling with this level of complexity because they're not just a simple hydraulic braking system or even an electric braking system, which are starting to come into play now. It's all of this, autonomous, semi-autonomous, radar that now affects the braking and the drivability. So it's just many, many dimensions that I don't think manufacturers or product folks were used to having to test against or figure out how they would properly work in an everyday environment. So that's the level of complexity that we're facing.
Yeah, well, that's fun, Stephen, that you're a car nut. And this my son's truck also doesn't have a steering column. It's an electronic device that steers the wheel. I don't think I'd like something like that. Mechanics don't fail suddenly, but electronics do. So,
it's so true, because it's that notion where it's just amazing, right? Because all of this electromechanical stuff is now starting to go away. So, you know, your brakes are hydraulic. Now that's going to start to go away. I know the new Corvette, the 2020 Corvette, has electronic brakes or electric brakes. So there's no fluid, right? So, the acceleration now, that happened a while back. You know, your accelerator is now not directly connected to your throttle body or your fuel injection. It's now electronic. And this just continues to evolve. Now soon, to your point, they'll have electronic steering. I know that's happening on the new Corvette as well. So, you know, what happens when these things fail, and how to test, and what is the driver going to be able to do or not do as it relates to things that aren't mechanical anymore?
Mm. Yeah, fascinating subject.
The car, right?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Well, before we get out of here, I got a question for you. I know that you've been mentored by people that you've admired when you were in college and probably at high school, and maybe your parents or something. And then as you get older, you're now a manager of the marketing team, so you have to do a lot of mentoring. Is there a creed to live by, a certain word of wisdom or something that you could leave us with today before we say goodbye?
I think the one thing that strikes me in this, and where we are in this particular point in time, is flexibility. Things are so adaptable and changeable that you really have to be flexible in what you're thinking about, what you're doing, what you're designing, because a lot of the platitudes or standards or foundations that were once considered untouchable are now in play. So you have to have that level of flexibility tempered against some reality, but that level of flexibility to deal with all of the different dimensions that are changing in our environment.
All right, Stephen. Very good stuff. Thank you so much. For those who've just tuned in, Stephen Hollis is the manager of the Watson IoT Engineering Marketing Team. He focuses on engineering, lifecycle management, and systems engineering portfolios. IBM is a sponsor of this year's Metricon Conference, also sponsored by Lockheed Martin. This is the 32nd year. You won't want to miss it. It's going to be at the Hearst Convention Center November 6th. And that's about halfway between Dallas and Fort Worth. We'll look forward to seeing you there. Hollis, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Colonel. I really appreciate your time and the opportunity to speak with you and the Metricon audience.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, this time I want to introduce you to a fascinating guest. We have with us Bill Radvat. He's the chairman and founder of NerveGen Pharma. And what brought it to our attention is innovative solutions for the treatment of nerve damage and neurodegenerative diseases beyond spinal cord injury to multiple sclerosis. Welcome to the program, Bill.
Thank you very much for having me on the show, Colonel.
We're so happy to have you. Now, a lot of people may not know, but multiple sclerosis is a disease where the immune system attacks the protective myelin sheath that covers the nerve fibers, and the nerve fibers can't communicate very well with the rest of the body when that happens. And I understand that it's not just multiple sclerosis, but there's a lot of diseases that have this problem, and you're working on developing... is it generating new nerves, or is it repairing the current nerves?
Well, it's an interesting new approach as far as MS goes. there are a number of fairly successful drugs already approved for MS, but this MS is an autoimmune disease, and those drugs are targeting trying to fix or repair, you know, reconfigure the immune system so that it doesn't attack the nerves. But it seems like they've somewhat exhausted the benefit of that approach, and so now the drug pharma companies are pivoting towards a new approach, and they're looking for new therapies. And what our drug, NVG-291, does is actually repair that myelin sheath, the coating. So in MS, you know, the body attacks the, you know, if you think of a wire from your toaster, outside of the wire is your protection. And the immune system is breaking that down. What ours does is actually, yeah, rebuild, repair that myelin sheath protective coating. And that's the new approach in medicine.
So you're not regenerating nerves. You're repairing the nerves that have been damaged.
Correct. And it's interesting, the compound we have. It has two different mechanisms of action. So we're actually starting are going to be starting our clinical trials in early 2020, and that is for human safety towards spinal cord injury. In that case, we are regenerating nerves, but in the case of MS, we found our compound actually rebuilds the nerve coating.
Wow, go ahead.
So yes, it's a remyelination approach, and that seems to be what's needed now for MS.
Okay, and I understand there's two separate studies have demonstrated that NerveGen's technology has facilitated nerve remyelination in both spinal cord injury and MS animal models, and you believe that makes NerveGen's compound an attractive opportunity for multiple sclerosis therapy and other things too.
Well, it's interesting. If we step back, there's been over 8 studies done on our compound over the years. A good number, most of them actually independent. They're done by different research organizations, which is terrific to support your data. But while the bulk of it started out in spinal cord, it has been shown successfully to help in stroke, cardiac arrhythmia, and MS. There's a hint of some success in Alzheimer's as well. So what we're looking at is a compound that can be, you know, a general fix for the nervous system.
Okay, so you're gonna concentrate on both repairing the myelin on the existing nerves that have been damaged and also regenerating new nerves. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's quite unusual for one compound to have these different, very strong mechanisms of action. But when we're working with really one compound in the manufacturing and going through the early clinical trials, all that work is, we're not duplicating. It does the same work for both indications. In fact, while we're advancing the clinical trials for spinal cord, that same work is almost entirely transferable to any other indication, including MS. So inherently, while we're just starting our MS program, it's moving along in the clinical trials phase because of the work we're doing in spinal cord.
Okay, then now it's administered orally or with injections or through osmosis or some other form? How are you doing this?
Yeah, it's a systemic fix. So essentially it's attracted to the wound area where it's active. But right now we give it subcutaneously, so we inject it into the body. And so it doesn't have to be injected into the site either.
It doesn't have to be injected into the actual site. It can just be injected anywhere in the body?
Correct.
And it's attracted to the area that that needs the new myelination or the nerve regeneration?
Correct. And, I mean, to step back where this really came from, I think is really quite important. As a co-founder, my friend and co-investor colleague, Dr. Harold Punnett, bedroom, actually had a freak accident, and, you know, stepped into a little hole, fell awkwardly on the 2x4 and was paralyzed from the waist down. And so he searched extraordinarily thoroughly for any solution to help her, and found out fairly quickly there is nothing approved for nerve regeneration, and really nothing in the horizon. What he did do, though, was put on his investor cap as well and got myself and our group involved to look at this technology. And we did about a year's work of due diligence to really make sure it really does what it said, because it seems almost too good to be true. And it seemed to be sitting out there, but we took this on and financed and took it public a few months ago. But what's really important for me was the founding scientist, Dr. Jerry Silver of Case Western in Cleveland, is really revered in, you'd have to put him in the top few people, top few neuro research scientists in North America, if not the world. Extraordinarily well-regarded and a wonderful gentleman. But what happened was he actually changed how the whole area looked at nerve injury. And he was the gentleman that actually figured out why nerves were getting stuck in the wound. And so if you cut yourself or, you know, damage yourself severely, everybody knows you get a big bump and a bruise, and that's because your body's sending in all sorts of fluids to protect and preserve and stop any further damage. What happened is the nerves they originally thought were dead, but they actually been stuck. And you can have videos of nerves throbbing in the scar that's formed. They're still alive for decades. And what he did was actually figure out what they were getting stuck in, and it's in a specific real sticky protein in the scar. And that was a real game changer. And he was actually in the wilderness, really, you know, research wise, for about 8 years before somebody else really started supporting it. Now it is the foundation of nerve injury research. And then what he did was partner with a group at Harvard and figure out why it was getting stuck. And there's one receptor on the nerve that's important when you're young. It helps the nerves find their way through the body, but goes relatively dormant. Unfortunately, that specific receptor gets stuck in the gooey scar. And so he was able to find out what the mechanism was. And then his team went about and found a compound that actually, you know, capped it. It binds with that receptor, covered it up, essentially, and allows the nerves to regrow. And it's really, you know, if you think of researchers here, been struggling with this problem for decades, and then him and his team come up with a solution that actually allowed nerves to regrow through the scar, was remarkable. And then all these studies have happened, and, you know, for instance, one group in Germany last year, independently, I mean, Dr. Silver only found out when they were getting their paper peer-reviewed, found they got up to 80% recovery. Ooh. In the animal models when they're severely wounded, damaged spinal cord. And, I mean, the numbers of each of these studies is absolutely remarkable, and repeated and mostly independent. So a great body of evidence through multiple indications.
Yeah, that kind of result is just astounding. Now then, you have to tell me, this friend of yours that hurt his back or her back or whatever and is paralyzed, has this method solved that problem, or is it just showing effects with others?
Well, no. Again, this is not in the human body yet. We're going through the clinical trial phase, so we're not allowed to administer to people yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, unfortunately, the good and the bad of having a fairly strict regimented regulatory system. So this is all animal models to date, and so unfortunately we can't give it to people. We are really seen as the great hope in spinal cord injury. All the emails that go to our website are directed to me, and so I get almost daily an email from somebody around the world that has had a spinal cord injury or a number of other injuries or diseases, looking for a solution. And clearly, we're really the only one in the nerve regenerative space that is showing this kind of problem.
this 80% results that you were telling me about from where, Germany or someplace in Europe or whatever, was that done on humans, or is that, again, experimental animals?
Yeah, it's again, it has to all happen in experimental animals. And with that body of evidence, again, nobody's even come close even on experimental animals, and over and over again. And that's why this sort of, you know, wonder drug has been picked up by all these different organizations, because they see it's a nervous system fix. So that's why the MS work that was done was actually by a completely independent group, same with the stroke and the cardiac arrhythmia. These are all independent groups. These aren't us and our team coming up with all these results. So while it's still animals, it's really greatly untouched as far as any other group has ever been able to come close to.
Well, I see you do plan to conduct a clinical trials for this particular treatment beginning early next year under an investigational new drug application with the Federal Drug Administration, expected to be submitted in the latter part of this year. And the company is planning the initial clinical trial to be expanded from a traditional safety-focused phase one. But I'm going to ask you about what it means on healthy humans, volunteers. First of all, what is a traditional safety-focused phase one?
Phase one is essentially a strict phase one used on administering your drug to healthy individuals. So in that case, it doesn't have to be MS patients or spinal cord patients. And so it's really to make sure your drug is safe. And that's really the first hurdle before you can really start using it on the wider population in as far as other trials. What we're doing is expanding it somewhat past that to find other indications. We're going to be looking likely at, you know, such things as finding other biomarkers in the body that react with the administration of the drug, which can help determine how and when to administer. There's other ancillary tests that we can also conduct. But also one thing, as we talk about this, one of the bigger concerns, especially patients waiting for a solution, is time, and time to the market. And there are multiple trials to go through here to make sure it is working, it is efficacious.
We've been speaking with Bill Radvack. He's with NerveGen Corporation out of Vancouver, Canada, and working on innovative solutions for the treatment of nerve damage and neurodegenerative diseases. It's been a fascinating, fascinating interview. Thanks so much for being with us, Bill.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Don't look at particular jobs as being above you. Always have that kind of perseverance and self-initiative, and be willing to work jobs, even if it doesn't look like they're going to get you to where they want to go. My name is Colin Gordon. I am a lead application engineer here at Schweitzer Engineering Laboratories.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
You live tomorrow, 'cause you know it will be there. I am waiting for you.